This is TJ Duckett of the Atlanta Falcons, and you're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on
CITR. Thanks.
CITR. Hi, this is TJ Duckett of the Atlanta Falcons. You're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on CITR.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Back here where we need ya.
Back here where we need ya.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Welcome back, welcome back. Welcome back.
Okay, everybody, welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. A cheesy song to start the show, but one of my first guests, he liked it, and that's what you got to do. You got to keep people happy. You got to give them what they want. Anyways, on the show today, first show of the 2007 year. You're getting old too. It's starting to add up for you too. 2007, the years are.
Yeah,
we got young kid over here though. He's still going good.
Young buck.
Anyways, folks, on the show today, our first show of the 2007 season, we're going to start off with our two guests, coach and a player, Alex Murphy from the UBC Thunderbirds men's basketball team. After that, we're going to be talking to Wilson Wong. Did anybody watch college football last night? Either of you two? You had practice.
The Boise State game.
Did you watch that Boise State game?
What a finish.
Well, absolutely phenomenal. Wilson Wong, he's going to come on. We're sort of watching it together. He's a Boise State fan. I don't know why. Maybe just for this season. Maybe he's not really.
It's the Smurf turf, I think.
Maybe he might just be joking about it. Anyways, Wilson will be with us. We'll talk about UBC women's basketball. They have bigger games this weekend than you do. You may not like that, but it is true.
Could be.
It is true. For their season...
I'll never admit it, though.
For their season, they're bigger games than what you guys have. After that, we're going to go to Detroit. Actually, we're going to go to Palm Desert, California, where a week from today, the Baseball Hall of Fame balloting will be released. We're going to talk to a guy who's been voting on the Baseball Hall of Fame for 40, almost 50 years now. Jerry Green from the Detroit News. Mark McGuire, he's voting for him.
He is, eh?
He's voting for Mark McGuire. We'll talk to Jerry about that. Steve Ewan from the Vancouver Province will be with us, talk a little World Juniors, and we'll get into baseball, and then we're going to talk some other stuff, and then at the end, BJ Bash, our man from Nevada, Las Vegas, will be with us to talk NFL. And that's it. That's the show. Then I go home and continue on with my boring life. That's pretty much it.
Not a bad show.
Anyways... Let's get into it right now. The UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. I opened up with welcome back, Cotter, there. And it's sort of like the welcome back to you guys. You've had your break.
Yep.
And as I see, your first game after a 27-day hiatus, you finally lose to a Canadian university basketball. I'm starting off mean today, aren't I?
Sounds like it.
Starting off a little mean today, but I saw your practice today. They had you running today.
Oh, yeah. We were running a lot.
And you had a practice last night.
Yeah, 7 o'clock last night.
7 o'clock last night, so they're making you pay for it. But Coach Vern Knopp with us right now. Vern, just got to ask you, 80-74, you lost to Concordia. You still have the perfect conference schedule, but it's the first time you've lost to a Canadian team this year. It was at the Guy Vitre Memorial Tournament in Victoria. You were able to come back the next day on Saturday and beat Queen 75-68, but not a good showing from everybody I've talked to versus Concordia. Casey Archibald, worst game shooting he's had in a long, long time.
In a while, this year anyway.
2 for 13 from the field. Not good for Casey. Better to get it out of the way now, I guess, than a regular season game, but... Flaws shown for your team, or what happened on the weekend?
Just to let you know, I wasn't there for the weekend, but from what I had heard, just kind of basically we didn't really show up to play. First game back after, I guess it was a 27-day layoff. It was pretty tough. You know, guys had, looks like they had a little too much fun maybe at Christmas time, spending time with the family and eating a little too much turkey. So just one of those games. No one really got going, I guess, other than Jason Behring, who shot the ball well. Everyone else just came out flat, and Concordia was, you know, deserved the win.
Tough to be on the bench for that one there, Alex?
No, it was pretty tough. A little lethargic, I thought, especially in warm-ups or whatever, but I'm sure we'll bounce back against SFU.
Right. So, but back to the weekend game, though, Coach. Let me ask you this. Is, you know, you guys have, you're not a team building anymore. You haven't been building for a while. You're sort of at the point where now you want to win it. Is it hard to stay up on that mountain? Because it's not like, okay, you know, yeah, we had a slip up every now and then, but we're still building. We're hoping to get better next year. I mean, this is your shot. This is the team you want to win. Is it hard to, as a coach, is it hard to keep the players maintained on that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we all know our ultimate goal is to win the national championship, and we are still building this year to get better for that tournament come later in the year. And one way to get better is how we play this weekend. So it's just, and everyone's always gunning for us. It's like we have a bullseye on our backs, so it keeps the guys motivated.
Okay, let's get into this weekend's games, though. You both have brought it up, so we'll jump into it. SFU struggling a bit on the season. You played them once so far this year at Ward Gym, 79-68 winners. UBC, you've beaten everybody. You're still 11-0 in conference play. You got a home-and-home with them on the season. Alex, your thoughts. I mean, growing up, I'm sure you watched a lot of CIS basketball here, a lot of Canada West basketball. UBC, SFU, this is a rivalry game for you guys.
Yeah, it's a big rivalry, but we beat them earlier in the season, but we're not going to take that. We're not going to let that alter our decisions or whatever throughout this week of practice and especially the game.
So what are they telling you? I mean, you guys obviously not happy with your performance. For your guys, it was a bit of a stinky performance. For your expectations the weekend?
Oh, no question.
No question.
Yeah.
So what are they telling you? What did you guys do wrong, and what do you got to work on?
We probably have to work on just getting back in shape, and that's what we're doing this week. And then communication, we didn't really talk a lot on defense especially, and offense, because we struggled. Everybody was struggling from the line and struggling from their from field goal percentage or whatever. So we just have to talk a lot and just help each other through everything. So.
And Coach, SFU, UBC, what kind of matchup are we looking at between you guys?
Well, SFU is one of the bigger teams in the country. They got one of the best low post players in Aaron Christensen, although he seems to be playing a lot more on the outside this year, which is kind of by doing everybody in Canada a favor. They're like I said, one of the biggest teams in the country. They're a tough rebounding team. They play real physical. They won't really look to run the ball. They're just going to walk it up. It's kind of contrasting the styles. We want to get up and down the floor, run as much as possible. They want to walk the ball up, play it in the 50s and 60s, and so it'll be a physical weekend.
Because, Coach, also, this is a team, SFU, 2 years ago, you basically raided their roster. You took three of their guys.
No, we didn't raid the roster. Their roster just kind of disintegrated.
Okay. Yes.
Let's put it that way.
Okay, absolutely, absolutely. But how are they coming around now? I mean, you took three of their top players, and they went everywhere, but how is SFU coming around now?
Well, they had a very young team last year, but they've kind of gone the college route the last couple of years, which is goes away from what they've traditionally done. They've always tried to build through bringing in high school recruits every year, but they've brought a couple older college kids that have helped them out. They're still building through young guys with Sean Burke and Kevin Shaw, two guys from Argyle. So they're still young and improving, but you know, it's still the Aaron Christian's still the leader of that team, and he's the main focus for us. You know, he's good enough to carry a team to a couple wins on a weekend, any weekend, so it'll be a tough matchup.
So tell us about Alex Murphy here, first-year guy for the UBC Thunderbirds, point guard coming from St. George's, being touted, Alex, I could just tell you what I hear, as the starting point guard for UBC next season. So tell us about this guy, Coach.
Well, Alex obviously came from St. George's. He was one of our top recruits last year, along with Brent Malish. He's you know, come in and backed up Adam Friesen this year, and we got huge expectations for Alex, not just for the next 4 years, but for this year as well. Second half of the year, we're expecting a lot of. He's had a couple months now to adjust to the CIS competition, so we're expecting big things from him.
Things coming around here. You're liking UBC?
Yeah, of course, especially playing with like players in their fifth year, like Casey, and learning from him, and learning from Jason Behring and Adam Friesen, and having two coaches that played point guard just helps a lot. And the encouragement from everybody is being awesome, so I'm liking it here a lot.
Why'd you come to UBC?
Well, because Kevin Hansen and Randy Nort, being point guards and in the national team and just developing under them, is such a great honor for me. So that, and of course academics.
I do have a question, though. You went to St. George's, and me personally, maybe, Coach, you can tell me about your situation, too, is when I got out of high school, I wanted to leave town. I went across the country to Western. I got out. I did Langara for a year, and then I went to Western. What did you do?
I stayed home. I was a homebody. Yep. I actually sat out 2 years after high school just to let the body heal a little
bit.
And then I just played locally at Douglas College. Never had any real interest in leaving home.
Right. No interest, Adam? Alex, sorry. No interest?
Well, I'm close with my family, yeah. And I know lots of people on the team already, so it was almost an easy transition for me. So I didn't really think about going overseas or whatever. So.
And were you heavily recruited by other schools? And
a couple of Canadian universities I was, and Div 2 schools, but just decided on UBC.
Any inkling of, can you drop it, who else was trying to talk you into it, or we'll let that be?
Carleton.
Yeah, oh really? Yeah.
Yeah, so talking with their coaches.
Quality program. So this guy was highly touted.
He was highly touted throughout Canada. So, I mean, we had our work cut out for us, but luckily Randy and Kevin, being point guards that they were, and kind of are, and at least they told you they're still good point guards. But had a big influence on him, and we were lucky to get him to come to our program.
So did Randy Nord talk you out of St. FX at all?
No, he did. Nothing like that.
And Alex, what's it like playing behind Adam Friesen, a guy who he's told me that when he does graduate from UBC, wants to maybe get into teaching, he's the point guard this year. What's your relationship?
Oh, he's an awesome person. Me and him get along really well. And we were studying for biomechanics a couple weeks ago, so we were studying together. So he's an awesome guy. And on the floor, we're trying to be more vocal, especially from the point guard position. So we're both in the same boat in that sense, and we get along really well. So,
what's biochemics?
Biomechanics?
Biomechanics.
Human kinetics course. It's pretty tough.
There we go. I'll let him answer that question.
We'll leave it at human kinetics.
Sounds good.
Pretty tough. And how's it coming off the bench this year? I mean, I asked Randy, actually, last night, are they considering, you know, one game this year, maybe just giving you a lot of minutes? Has it been a bit of a transition? Because obviously in high school, you're the big star on the team. Everybody's recruiting you. And now you got to come in here and come off the bench and really work your way up. Is that tough? Was that tough for you mentally to adjust to?
Of course it was tough, yeah. But I think that everybody has a position on the team. Everybody has an individual role. And so if my role is coming off the bench, then I'm happy with that. So next year, maybe I can start or whatever. But everybody starts from somewhere, right? So
glad he has that attitude, hey?
Well, it's great that he has that attitude, no question.
So, and how's he come along, though, this year? Things been going good?
Things been going good. You know, he's a typical rookie in that he has his ups and downs at different times of the year. And, you know, coming off the bench for him at the beginning of the year was a big struggle for him, I think. He probably wouldn't admit it at the time. But, no, he's exceeded our expectations, and he's going to have to continue to get better each game out.
So can we expect, or I guess, you know, the games are so important, can we expect Alex's minutes to improve or more minutes as the season goes on, or just keep things as they go?
No, we always like to get all our guys as many minutes as possible. You know, a lot of during the course of the game, how foul trouble and how certain guys are going are going to have to dictate who plays well. If Alex comes in and just gets hot and plays well, he gets more minutes. That's kind of how we work it out with everybody.
And how's St. George's doing this year?
I haven't kept up. I think they're in Santa Barbara over the Christmas break, so they're going to play some good teams down there.
Fancy school,
yeah. Lots of money.
No comeback to that?
No.
Terrific. Alex Murphy, thanks for coming on. Alex,
no problem.
I do appreciate it. Vern, as always.
Thank you.
UBC and SFU. Friday and Saturday, Friday's games will be at the War Memorial Gym, and Saturday will be at Burnaby, the Mountain, SFU, and UBC. We will be doing the women's game on Friday. The men's game will be doing both the men and the women. It says AM 7:30 here. I don't know how that's going to work. What?
6:15 start on Saturday.
6:15 start. Yeah, I always. That's confusing to me. Anyways, Vern Knopp and Alex Murphy from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll be right back with Wilson Wong to talk a little UBC Thunderbird women's basketball. You are listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM. Kind of a little problem here.
You get the car, I'll get the knife. chance to take the world apart and figure out how it works. Don't let me know what you find out. I need a car, you need a guide, you need a map. If I don't die or worse, I'm gonna need a nap. At best I'll be asleep when you get back. I wanna see it when you find out what comets, stars, and moons are all about. I wanna see their faces turn to backs and heads and slowly get smaller. I wanna see it now. I wanna see it now.
Definitions of fiesta, party. And if ever a college football game that was a happening scene, it was the 2006 Fiesta Bowl between Boise State, the 7.5 underdog, and undefeated WAC conference champion, the undefeated WAC conference champion, and the old school Big 12 Kings, 7-time national champion, Oklahoma Sooner. This Fiesta Bowl is one of 5 BCS bowl games, not the national championship game. And let's just say that it's a big deal and that Boise State got to play in this tilt and that there's not enough room in the microwave to explain the U.S. college bowl system right now. What we had last night in Phoenix was one of the great sporting events you will ever see in your life. You laughed and were stunned with great plays that are not supposed to be called in any situation, let alone the biggest game in an Ohio State, in an Ohio-based school's history, and at the most crucial moments. Statue of Liberty, that won the game. running back lining up as a quarterback and throwing a touchdown pass. That tied the game in overtime. Kooky lateral with 12 seconds to go on the opponent's 30 and needing a touchdown to tie even that work. And to top it off, they chose the Statue of Liberty play on a two-point conversion when a point after would have kept the game going. Did I really see that? The studs of the night, the Boise State Broncos, played with all the bravado and flash that represent the good qualities of the Showtime.com era that we live in. It was a game that when you want, that made you want to rent Moving with Richard Pryor and eat a potato. Joining us right now, he watched the game. We were talking to each other on the phone last night. Wilson Wong. Wilson, how are we doing?
I love the intro.
Did you?
The movie clip. Unbelievable.
You've never seen Moving with Richard Pryor,
I haven't, but I might.
Honestly, that and Amazon Women on the Moon, my two favorite movies. And, Wilson, to Boise State it up, bringing us in here today was, I asked Bryce Dunn, our program director, and Luke Mead, our music director, when I got in here, I wanted a Boise band.
Right.
And that was Built to Still. Built to Spill.
Yep.
With their number, I don't know. Some Things Last a Long Time.
And are you sure about that's what you played?
No. But I know I did play them. And that's good enough. Wilson, have you ever seen a game? Have you ever seen an ending? A last minute and 30 seconds in an overtime. I mean, kooky things do happen in college football. Crazy things do happen in the CFL. But how many times last night were you like, okay, Boise State's lost now?
Well, first of all, I thought Boise State had won the game when they got the interception in the third quarter, made it 28-10. I thought, well, you know what? They probably have this game in hand. You knew Oklahoma was going to make that some sort of comeback. They did. And, I mean, just even when Oklahoma tied the game, I mean, it took three times for them to convert a two-point conversion. I mean, that was how crazy it was. I mean, you saw that, too.
Yeah, lots of flags.
Lots of flags. Yeah. I mean, they got the touchdown on a tip drill, converted on the two-point conversion, and you thought, well, okay, so this will probably go in overtime. And then Boise, Zabransky, the quarterback, throws a terrible interception. They intercept it, go back for the touchdown. I think there was a minute 7 left, and there was no one in this, you know, who was watching that game who would have thought Boise State had any chance to even come back and tie it.
Well, maybe, but not with the way they were even moving the ball on that drive. And they had a 17 coming up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with 30 seconds to go, or 21 seconds to go or something?
It was 4th and 18,
yeah.
Or 17.
And they threw the fourth down pass about 2 or 3 yards short of the first down marker.
Yeah, and you pointed that out. I mean, that really made a difference, because I remember you saying that there were three Oklahoma defenders who converged on the player that had the ball.
Because they had to keep him from getting that 3 yards for the first down.
Exactly, and then he did the old hook and ladder, as they call it. I mean, we couldn't believe what was happening. I was actually talking to you on the phone because, yeah. I mean, you...
I gambled.
You were gambling.
Yeah, it's sports action, Wilson, so it's legal.
It is. Yeah.
And I bet on Boise State and USC to cover the spread, but I had Boise State to win, which is a +4. They had to win by 4 points. And if they had done that, which I ended up losing my ticket, I would have won $180 on that one game. It was like a $20 bet, USC and Boise State to win yesterday. And you know what, though? Hey, if you're going to lose a sports action ticket, lose it on that. Well, because they covered the spread, at least. I got my money back for all my bets I made yesterday.
And that was just to tie the game.
What's that?
We still haven't even talked about the overtime.
Oh, the overtime. Well, the other thing was, I mean, we watched Bob Stoops, the Oklahoma coach, and what I loved about that game, too, was the, as they kept saying in the broadcast, was the blue blood fans of, you know, Oklahoma. They're the blue blood teams of college football.
Yep. You talk about St. George's.
Well,
same sort of stuff.
7-time national champions. I think they got the most wins in U.S. college football since World War II. And here they are. I mean, how many years we talked about yesterday, how many years do you think they played the wishbone?
Oh, about 50?
About 50, probably. And for Oklahoma to lose to a team that pulled that.
Yeah.
must have made some Sooner fans kind of sick.
And everyone else very happy, hopefully.
Well, yeah, who knows? And the overtime, though, Wilson, you got into that one. Oklahoma getting the touchdown on their first drive.
On one play,
Adrian Peterson takes it. They do the CFL style, except they start on the 25-yard line. First play, they hand off to Adrian Peterson, a 25-yard touchdown run. And he was still going when he got in the end zone.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have gone for another 50. Who knows?
And that was pretty big, too, because you thought, you know, the way that they did it, just on one play, him bowling everyone over, you thought, well, you know what, maybe this is the game.
And then Boise State in the overtime. You saw one play. I missed it. I was passing in and out from the night before. But they had one play where the quarterback, they did a lateral to the quarterback or something?
They handed it off to their running back, and it looked like they wanted to run a lateral pass back to the quarterback for another forward pass. But the running back decided to eat it because he just had, you know, he had nothing. That was one of the trick plays, but we saw both.
Then on
more.
Fourth down and two, on the 4-yard line. Now, I don't know what yard line it was on. I think it was on the four, where if they don't get it, what they do, and you see Atlanta do it sometimes. You used to see the Pittsburgh Steelers do it with Cordell Stewart. Philly will do it where Brian Westbrook lines up as the quarterback. San Diego will do it sometimes with Tomlinson. Is they put the quarterback out as a wideout, and the running back. This is, if they don't score here, the game's over.
Yep.
The running back is the quarterback, and all the announcers are saying, it's going to be a run, it's going to be a run. He threw a touchdown pass. And then all they have to do to keep it going is kick the convert, which I'm hoping for because they can maybe win in another overtime, get a touchdown, and then stop Oklahoma, and they win by the 4 points I need. But they decide to go for the two-point conversion. And I'm saying, what the hell's going on? And then on the two-point conversion, they pull off the Statue of Liberty play, and it works.
And then we just couldn't believe, I mean, we were watching it, but we couldn't believe that.
No.
I mean, this was actually happening.
No, it actually happened. And Wilson, really the question, and I'm going to reach, you know, that people bring up old historical things just to sort of tie it in and sound smart. Well, on this day in 1965, Joe Namath of the University of Alabama signed for a reported $400,000 with the AFL, which ended up eventually merging with the NFL,
mm-hmm.
you know, before the WHA, before the ABA in basketball. Is this game last night, this is my tie-in, it's weak, but this is my tie-in, is this game last night, could this change U.S. college football? Could this make it that a team like Boise State, do they have to find a way for these teams to win a national championship? I don't know if they're going to do it, but do you think they should find a way to do that?
I think they should, mm-hmm. but they won't.
Yep.
Frankly, this way, a team like Boise, what's happening right now, where they get to play in a big bowl game, but not necessarily the national championship, is that you still get the great story of Boise.
Without having to ruin your whole bowl season.
And without having to really insult the big-time school.
Right.
And so what you have right now is a great story that everyone's talking about, which is Boise, and they'll talk about it for who knows how long, because this was one of the most special endings to a game that I think I've ever seen and what many people have ever seen.
Yeah.
But a week later, a week from yesterday, January 8th, they're going to have their national championship game, and people are going to talk about that.
And they had the Rose Bowl earlier in the day.
And they have the Rose Bowl. And, you know, they're going to have the Sugar Bowl tonight. I mean, it's not going to be a real big sort of
hyped
matchup.
What's the other? I love the Sugar Bowl.
I mean, Louisville and Wake Forest aren't, you know, really big-time teams.
And then you got Notre Dame and LSU playing later in the week.
That's right. So, I mean,
why do they need a playoff? They're going to get more. You're right. They're getting more attention. And with the Ohio State-Michigan regular season game and all that stuff, there's no point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people are going to be calling for it, and people are going to say, well, you know, Boise State deserves a chance, and, you know, they've proven that they can play with an Oklahoma team that lost twice but really should have only lost once this year because they had a big controversy at Oregon. But, you know, this whole system right now, it's got, you know, it's created some great stories, and who knows? I mean, for a team like Boise, you still look at it. They have to pull all this off to beat an Oregon team, an Oklahoma team. You know, who knows if they would be able to do this in a playoff system?
Yeah.
Even though I'm a huge fan of all these small schools, you don't. I mean, who knows, right?
Yeah. So, Wills, I do have to go. I got to move on now. We didn't get into UBC today. I'm sorry, but we'll do it another day.
Well, you know, it's going to be a big UBC SFU game. That's all you really need to know.
Awesome. Wills, I apologize.
Yep.
Thanks a lot, and I'll see you on the weekend.
Sounds good.
Okay, we got to get going here. Jerry Green from the Detroit News is going to come on and tell us who he voted for the Baseball Hall of Fame. The announce will be given to us next weekend. Maybe if we got time later in the show, we'll get Wilson back on and preview UBC and SFU. I apologize for that. Anyways, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Jerry Green from Palm Desert, California, will be with us right after this. Welcome, everybody, back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Well, with us on the line right now, we've got some Baseball Hall of Fame talk to get to. With us all the way from Palm Desert, California, this guy has written for the Detroit News covering sports. He's been covering sports as a professional writer since 1956. And he's been covering baseball and voting on the Baseball Hall of Fame since around 1969 and 1970. And this is a very important year, a very intriguing year for the Baseball Hall of Fame voters. We're going to find out who got in next Tuesday. The announcement will be 1 week from today. So with us from the Detroit News to tell us all about it and who he voted for, Jerry Green. Jerry, thank you very much for coming on the show today. And
thank you, Daryl.
Thank you, Jerry. And Jerry, just to ask you, you know, it's the big Hall of Fame voting this year. It's not like last year where we were wondering if anybody was, in fact, going to get in. You got Ripken. You got Gwynn. I'm positive you voted for those guys. And the big question I have for you, and I know your answer, you did it. Jerry Green, you voted for Mark McGwire.
I did vote for Mark McGwire. And if Ripken and Gwynn are not unanimous, the whole thing's a fraud. But I voted for Mark McGwire for several reasons. I think he hit a lot of home runs before there were any rumors about him, and to my knowledge, that's all that they still are, rumors, because I don't think Mark was ever convicted of anything. He never pleaded guilty to anything. Down here on this side of the border, and I'm sure in both of our countries, a person is innocent until proven guilty, and Mark McGwire has not been proven guilty, so that was the reason I voted for him.
Well, I read your article, Jerry, in DETnews.com, DETnews.com, and you say guilty. This is why you voted for McGwire. You go, guilty. I did it because of what I saw. I did it because of what I believe. I did it because of what I know. I ticked off Mark McGwire's name on the Hall of Fame ballot along with the names of nine others. Then I sealed the sheet of paper, and I mailed it to be recorded with the hundreds of ballots from, this is what I love, from the other craggy, determined, grumpy, ink-stained wretches. And from all that has spouted from the steroids controversy, most of those moralizing journalists left blank in the tiny square to the left of Mark McGwire's names for beliefs of their own. So you believe that I take it you're not too fond of your fellow Hall of Fame balloters here.
Well, some of them I am, some of them I'm not. I have some, you know, very strong opinions about the print medium today. I think a lot of guys are, well, you know, they vote with poor reasons sometimes, or vote against guys for poor reasons. I'll use Jack Morris, who pitched for the Tigers and the Blue Jays and the Twins and won 4 World Series games and won 250-some-odd regular season games. He was a magnificent pitcher, and he is, in my opinion, barred from the Hall of Fame because there are too many writers that Jack offended when he was pitching. Jack was not the most pleasant of guys to a lot of people in the media. And that should not matter. The guy's accomplishments on the ball field should matter. But I'm pretty certain that Jack Morris has not gotten in and has been rejected 7 times now because a lot of guys didn't like him. And that's the wrong reason for voting. And so I will not, you know, I just don't want to do it that way.
Right, Jack.
And we are a bunch of crabby, craggy old goats, most of us.
Well, that's okay. But Jack Morris, 254 career wins. And as far as I'm concerned, he had the most wins, I believe, for any pitcher in the 1980s. And as far as I'm concerned, pitched maybe the most underappreciated game in baseball history. It's definitely not talked as much about as it should be. Game 7 of the 1991 World Series, 10 innings in a 1-0 win versus the Atlanta Braves. I don't know if you're ever going to see that again. So let me ask you, Jerry, from that game, you got to see Jack Morris pitching for the Tigers all those years, but that was one of the greatest games a pitcher will ever throw.
That game to me was vintage Jack. Now, I was one of the writers who got along with Jack Morris most of the time, except for a month or so in 1984 when he went into had a bad mood or something like that. Anyway, but most of the time we got along, and Jack told me that the manager of the Twins wanted to yank him out of that game when it was 1-0. After 9 innings, and Jack said, "I'm not coming out." And here it is, the 7th game of the World Series. Everything is, you know, just teetering there. And Jack Morris is a tired pitcher going into the 10th inning, and he won it 1-0. And that was vintage Jack Morris. He was stubborn. He was obstinate. He said a lot of things he regretted later.
Right.
But he won enough games. I mean, he won some 90 or 85 more games than Sandy Koufax did. He won more games than Don Drysdale did. And I believe he belongs, along with several other pitchers who were in the high 200s and have been barred from getting in. Bert Blyleven's one. Tommy John's another. And I think they belong.
Why is it so hard, then? Why are so few people getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame nowadays?
Because we vote, and I think all of us in this regard, we're very discriminating in the way we vote. I mean, there's a Peter King, who writes for Sports Illustrated and sits in the Pro Football Hall of Fame committee with me, says, "This is not the Hall of the Very Good, it's the Hall of Fame." And there's a distinction, there's a barrier there. There are a lot of very good ball players, and some of them get in when they shouldn't, and other guys are kept out when they should get in. And I always believe that there's a difference between greatness and really being very good.
Right.
And you know, I vote that way, and I think Mark McGwire was a great home run hitter. In the same column that you just quoted from, I wrote that I saw his first home run, and he certainly was not on any sort of juice then, and he hit a line drive into the center field bleachers at Tiger Stadium in Detroit, and it was a monumental home run. You know, it's one of the few home runs I remember.
Right. Back on to McGuire now, Jerry. You know, I'm just a Canadian guy on the radio. I appear my opinions don't really mean too much, but
well, I disagree with that.
Okay, but, thank you. I appreciate it.
Canadian guys on the radio are fine. I live half more than half the year in Detroit, and I get Canadian radio, and it's pretty darn good, I think.
Cool, appreciate it. But Mark McGuire, my question with him is, in about the early 1990s, he was starting to have some really bad heel problems, and there was one year where he hit, I think his numbers were 201 with about 22 home runs, and
right.
He was constantly having injury troubles. And I'm guessing, as you say, there's no proof till, you know, we're never going to find out unless it's not happening. Where from there in about the late 90s, he was suddenly getting healthy again. And that's where I'm guessing that he was starting to do that stuff. And if you just take out if you take out the last 5 or 6 years of his career and you look at probably what would have happened if he never was able to recover from those heel injuries, Jerry, I don't think he gets in personally.
Well, you use the word if there. You can't take out those last years, and if he used steroids, he was not really breaking any rule because Major League Baseball did not have an anti-steroid rule at that time. He was probably doing something wrong ethically, and whether it's cheating or not, I don't know, but getting back to the sports writers, you know, I want to know a sports writer in the world or a journalist in the world or a human being in the world who has not done something wrong one time or another, who might have scandalized himself or herself. You know, I know a lot of journalists who break ethics codes, and that bothers me very much. And some of that forces my thinking.
Right, and the other one that I got from your article, and you hear it all the time, and it is true, is the sports writers, the media, baseball itself, completely on the Mark McGuire bandwagon in 1998. Nobody would bring up the word steroids, and now these people who made money off of him are suddenly ignoring him.
Well, whether we make money off of him or not, we cover him, and that's important, and it's helping the game of baseball. The publicity that we give them, I think, contributes to the health of the game of baseball.
Yep.
I also believe that Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa, when they had that home run duel going for Roger Maris's record, and there's another guy I voted for the Hall of Fame for years on the basis of his one season, but that's another point. Those two guys rescued baseball. I mean, baseball was in the dumps then. It was in the dumps because of the lockout and the cancellation of the World Series, and I think it was 93. The Blue Jays were champions of the world for 2 years running without playing a ball game, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he has to get some merit points for that.
Okay, just moving on a bit here. I just got a couple more questions. Jerry Green from the Detroit News. Alan Trammell, you also voted for him.
I voted for Alan Trammell because I thought he was as good a shortstop as Cal Ripken, as good a ball player. His lifetime batting average happened to be higher than Ripken's. Alan Trammell was not as durable as Ripken. He was not as strong, but on the other hand, I thought he was an excellent ball player. And, I think he belongs in.
Right. Did you vote for Andre Dawson or Jim Rice?
I think I voted for Dawson, and I think I voted for Rice. I'm not sure. Shortly after I voted, I left Michigan to come to California because I'm retired, and I go where all the retirees are, and I see a lot of BC license plates down here in the California desert, incidentally.
Yeah, yeah. That's where my grandparents are.
Uh-huh. And I really don't know where my ballot is. I thought I brought it with me, but
right.
I'm not certain.
Okay, no problem.
And but I voted for 10 guys, and I know of the 10, only two will get in. I wrote in the same column that McGuire wasn't going to get in because of I was a minority vote, and my lead on the column was guilty because I'm guilty of voting for him, according to my peers.
Right.
I have friends who voted against him, and they think I'm wrong. I think I'm right.
Yeah. Jerry, one last question. Thanks for doing this. Is we're, you know, Canadian Football League up here, and you're of course, I believe you're on the committee for the Football Hall of Fame.
I am in the. I am a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame Selection Committee and also the Seniors Committee.
Okay.
I also have my own name in there as a winner of the Dick McCann Memorial Award, which it goes to one sports writer every year.
Oh, wow. We have a complaint about the Pro Football Hall of Fame up here.
Okay.
We have a complaint. Canada, the country, has a complaint. You have to change the name. It's not the Pro Football Hall of Fame, or else Doug Flutie, we believe, should be in that Hall of Fame, because up here he put up numbers that are absolutely untouchable, but down there it really is, in Canton, the NFL Hall of Fame, is it not?
Well, yes, essentially it is. I agree with you. I can't argue. However, Warren Moon just went in last year, I believe.
But on his NFL stats, not his CFL stats.
Correct. And I think Bud Grant went in, and Bud Grant played up there, and I believe coached up there also. It's probably, well, everybody realizes it's the NFL Hall of Fame. The CFL, I don't know. I mean, first of all, you play on that elongated field.
Yeah, absolutely.
You take the ball into the end zone, and it's awarded a point.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's being fortunate enough to live in Michigan, I'm able to see CFL games on television because there's no way to stop the Canadian television from crossing the Detroit River and into the United States, which is good for us. it's not CFL, but it's Hockey Night in Canada was really fun to watch for years and years and years and years. I remember watching one game back in the 60s when Rogie Vachon came out of Junior B and played for the Canadiens on a Saturday night and stopped Gordie Howe on a breakaway.
Wow.
Well, Rogie Vachon happens to be one of the residents of this California desert in La Quinta, and I interviewed him a few years ago, and we talked about that.
Oh, wow.
So that was fun. I feel very strongly about our relationship with Canada. I think it's a wonderful country. I just wish when I go over to Windsor for dinner, and I used to do that quite a bit, that it wasn't as tough to get back into the U.S. and get home.
That's for you. That's for your country to deal with, not for us.
I understand. I mean, I've ridden across that border on a bicycle.
Right.
Back and forth over the Detroit-Windsor, the bridge there, the international bridge.
Terrific. Jerry Green, Jerry, thank you very much for doing it. I do appreciate it. I met you at the Indian Wells, a tennis tournament in March. I'll be down there again this year, and I hope to bump into you again. And I have to say, I don't know if you mind. I personally, Jerry, don't think McGuire should get in this year.
Well, that's your opinion. You are certainly entitled to that opinion and entitled to voice it. We can argue about it over a tennis match down here in March, I hope. And, you're going to wind up being right on it because he's not going to get in there. You know, if he gets 4 of 10 votes out of the several hundred votes, 40%, I would be surprised.
Right.
I don't think he'll get a quarter.
But he will get enough to stay eligible.
Probably. And, you know, my own opinion is that Mark McGuire belongs in, but that he never will get in.
Mm. Well,
I have the same feeling about Pete Rose, incidentally.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'd love to do it, but we'll save that for another day. Jerry, thanks a ton for doing this. I do appreciate
Darryl.
It. Okay. Thank you, Jerry. I'll see you in March.
Okay, I really appreciate being asked to be on your show.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, that was Jerry Green of the Detroit News, been covering baseball and sports since 1956. Love talking to him. You know, I was able to meet him at a tennis tournament in Indian Wells. I go to it every year with my father, and a guy, you know, there's a guy, Jerry Green. You can go find articles on him on Det News, DETnews.com. You can find his article on Mark McGuire. I mean, the stories guys like that have, just unbelievable, and a very nice gentleman. Anyways, we are going to take a break here. You're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio. Oh, I tell you, on a personal level here, just after the whole New Year's and Christmas weekend, I am still a little beat up. And, you know, you don't really feel it till you actually have to go out. I think you know where I'm coming from. And that's really where I'm at right now. Anyways, folks, we're going to take a break. You're listening to 101.9 FM. Steve Yeun from the Vancouver province is going to be with us when we get back. Going to talk a little World Juniors, going to talk a little Vancouver Giants and all that stuff. All right. We will be right back after this. Show on the first Tuesday of the 2007 calendar year, and with us on the line right now is Steve Yeun from the Vancouver province. Steven, how we doing? How's your new year?
It's been very good. I'm outside barbecuing.
It is sunny, isn't it?
Well, it's dark now.
It is dark now, isn't it?
But it was sunny, yes, earlier.
How was your new year, Steven?
It was okay. I was out in Chilliwack watching the Vancouver Giants take on the Chilliwack Bruins in a barn burner.
Nice, nice.
Oh, it was, yeah, it was okay.
I'm still recovering from the Christmas and everything festivities. I'm still recovering here.
From the Hanukkah?
Nah, not Hanukkah's been over too long now.
Okay.
Hanukkah's long over.
Okay.
Hanukkah's long over, but it sort of hit me. I had trouble getting out of bed today. And then I got here, and about 15 minutes into the show, I kind of felt it.
Yeah.
But you got to trudge on, don't you?
You are a big game guy. That's what people say.
I don't think so. Anyways, with us right now, Steve Yeun from the Vancouver province, going to get into a little Vancouver Giants and a little World Junior talk right now. But, Steve, first off, I just had Jerry Green on, veteran sports writer from the Detroit News. He's been covering sports professionally since 1956. You going to do it that long? You going to do the 50-year thing?
No.
No, you're getting out, huh?
I'm getting out maybe tomorrow. I've had enough.
That's it. Game over. Anyway, Steve, he wrote an article, and he's been voting on the Baseball Hall of Fame since 1970. And
how nice is that, eh?
All that stuff. And he's in the Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. He can get in, but Doug Flutie's not.
Who knew?
Anyway, Steve, he is voting for Mark McGuire. Jerry Green is voting for Mark McGuire. He doesn't think McGuire will get in, and his reasons are that he thought McGuire should have got in, was probably going to get in if he didn't do the steroids, and I think he saw a lot of hypocrisy in the way the writers were all deifying him in 1998, and now they're all, you know, treating him like, you know, you're evil, you're bad, and I don't think he liked that, and he's voting for him. But the one that got me, And I want to get your opinion on this. You're a baseball guy here, Steve. Jack Morris. Mm-hmm. He says a lot of the writers had a vendetta, have a vendetta still, against Jack Morris.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
254 wins, 2,478 strikeouts. Most wins ever in the, most wins in the 1980s. He won World Series with three different organizations, and he pitched what I think that what I've seen the most underappreciated pitching performance in the history of, that I've ever seen in baseball.
I still like the Oral Hershiser won that one playoff.
No, I'm talking for one game.
Okay.
One game. It was Jack Morris, Game 7, 1991 World Series, Twins Braves. 10 shutout innings, 1-0 winning Game 7. You can never really top that.
Yeah.
That's
got some legs.
Yeah, I'm talking Hershiser, the best pitcher I've ever seen. Yeah. Over. I mean, no question about it. He got a save in the 1988 playoffs on no day's rest.
Yeah.
But Jack Morris, Game 7, 1991 World Series, and this is a guy, Jack Morris. 254 wins, that's all, but he was also a big game pitcher, Jack Morris. So,
well, World Series guy, yeah. I mean, he was I'd put him in.
Yeah, you would, hey?
I'd put him in. I mean, they're not asking me, but I would.
Awesome. So, and McGuire, what do you think? We're going to find out a week from today. Jerry tells me that it's going to be Gwynn and Ripken. Nobody else gets in.
Yeah.
McGuire, what's the over-under? I think it's 25% is the over-under. On how many votes he's going to get. What do you think he's going
to get? I think he'll get just enough to not get in.
Oh, you think he's going to get all the way up to like 70, hey?
No, maybe not that high. I think he'll get 50.
Okay.
I think there'll be enough people making sure that if they're voting for him, that there's enough voting against him so he doesn't get in and kind of spoil the whole good vibe with Ripken and Gwynn.
So that's what you think, eh?
That's my official opinion.
I'll put it at 22%, 26%.
Okay, I'm going to say 48.
40, okay, I'm going to write it down.
Okay, write it down. We'll talk about it.
I'm going to write it down. We'll talk about it. Awesome. All right, Steve, let's get into the World Junior Hockey Championships. And I don't know, is it just me, or and was it because it was in Vancouver last year? Or what's? I'm just not as into it this year.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think it's... There was a real good buzz here, and I think people really got off on just it being here and everything that surrounded it. And you just can't, you know, as good as TSN does, it doesn't mean the same when you're not there.
And when it's not, even when it was in Canada, but in another, I remember when it was in Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it, but it's something about it when it goes overseas.
Well, because they're playing in empty buildings, and,
yeah.
You know, it just doesn't seem to mean as much.
And you've talked to these people. I mean, there's that whole it might come here every 3 years. Why don't they just have it here every year?
Because I think people would complain enough about the home field advantage. But they can't be making any money in Sweden.
No. So what are they doing? What's going to happen long term to this tournament? Is it going to be in Canada once every 2-3 years or what?
Something like that. I think so. I think they'll stay in North America.
I mean, even if they go to the northern U.S., they could still get away with it, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was fine in Grand Forks.
Yeah. Did you go to that one?
No, I didn't.
You didn't go in that one. So, okay, Canada will be taking on the U.S.
Uh-huh.
They're gonna, and I love this. Thank you, tournament organizers. 6:30 in the morning tomorrow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll be up.
Well, that's actually true. You can watch it before you go off to work, eh?
Yeah.
I have to sleep tomorrow. I have some catching up to do right now. But what kind of matchup are we looking at, Canada and the U.S.? Who are some of the stars you have to look for? Especially, I mean, the States team was, you know, highly touted coming into the last year. They still got J.J. Jack Johnson. I really liked him in last year's tournament. How's the States looking, and what kind of matchup are we looking at tomorrow?
I think they're very good in the back end. I think Jack Johnson and Eric Johnson, I think, you know, I wonder about their goaltending with Frazee and, you know, where they're going to go with that. I mean, Canada should win. Canada's team is just so good blue line wise, and Carey Price looks so good in net that I can't see them having any trouble.
And who are some of the stars on Canada? Who are some of the big name prospects who we're going to see in the NHL this year? And are there guys on this team that aren't drafted yet who are going to go real high?
Well, the guy that's not drafted that's probably going to go real high is Sam Gagner. He's Dave Gagner's kid. You know, he was part of the Brian Burke trade for the goalie of the future.
Right.
Back when the Kevin Weeks trade.
Whoa. Read that again.
Dave Gagner?
Yeah, Dave Gagner. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, then, solid Minnesota North Star in his day.
Yeah. Yeah. And a part-time Vancouver Canuck.
Briefly.
Also briefly. So, there's a guy that people here would understand. I think I think the guy that seems to be really having a coming out party is little Ryan Russell from the Medicine Hat Tigers, whose team has a very good shot at playing here come Memorial Cup time. So he's a fun guy to watch. He's a smallish kind of new hockey defenseman, kind of one of these smaller guys. So he's very good. And Bourdon's been okay. I still think he's favoring that ankle. So he's a guy that fans here can really get into.
Still favoring the ankle from last year?
Well, there's pins in it, and it's taken him a while. I just don't think he's as good as he was a year ago.
Right.
Before he did the ankle.
Right. So Canada, the U.S., I mean, what would you put? Is Canada a heavy favorite in this game? They played in the round robin. It was kind of close. Canada, I think, won it by 3, but they got
6,
the empty netter at the end.
Yeah, 6-3 with an empty net goal. Actually, they win by a couple.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So, and then the other one, it's going to be...
I'm biased, so.
You are from the country.
Oh, yeah.
You are from the country. And the other one, we're going to have Sweden, so the home country's still in it, taking on Russia. And from all I hear, Russia is a powerhouse team.
Yeah, I think they're the ones that are going to bounce through on the other side. So I think you get your traditional Canada-Russia final.
So, and who are some of the guys we got on this Russian team?
I have no idea. Russian guys.
Bunch of old Red Army players.
Old Red Army guys. I think somehow they got Tretiak some eligibility.
Yeah, Krutov, I hear he's back.
I hear he's back. I hear he's slimmed down, though.
Yeah, I hear he's back. I hear he's they're giving him power play time. they're giving him power play time. And Larionov is a face-off specialist late.
Oh, there you go.
Late. He comes out there when he's got to win a face-off late in the game or in his own zone.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out, wins the draw, goes straight to the bench.
That's the way it's got to be.
It's got to be. But this tournament, Steve, I mean, is it up and down? Has it peaked in popularity, this tournament, or is this just a solid tournament that everybody's going to always like? What do you think? I don't know. I just seem it. Is it just this year, or is it still something?
I think it's just hard to get into when it's away.
Right.
And I think it's hard to get, I mean, there's not a, well, I shouldn't say there's not a real Canuck presence there because Bourdon's there, but it doesn't seem as sexy this year when it was like right near, kind of right in your face.
Yeah, and especially last year. I don't know. Were you guys just building them down last year, Team Canada, or were they actually that big of an underdog?
A little bit of both. I think they were kind of underselling themselves on purpose.
Yeah.
Trying to take some pressure off. And I think a lot of us fell for it.
And then the tournament started and you realized you were kind of duped, eh?
Well, I think a lot of us were kind of duped. Yeah.
So,
not gonna lie.
Awesome, and your Vancouver Giants, Steven, and this is a team that right now, the pub is sort of down low, and, I mean, how big is the Memorial Cup when it's going to be here in about 3 months' time?
Well, considering the Canucks will probably be long over by that point, I think it'll be huge. I think this is a bandwagon town, and I think people are going to get real excited. And they've already sold, heading into Christmas, they had already sold 12,000 tickets a game for this tournament. So I think it's going to be absolutely bonkers, right? It's going to be... like very few things we've seen before.
How many tickets? Are there still tickets to the final available?
I believe so. They're just the way they're describing it is they've sold 12,000 tickets a game for the 8 or 9 games or whatever it is.
Oh, so you can still get some, hey?
You can probably get packages and stuff. Yeah.
But do you have to buy? Are they doing it like the World Juniors, where you have to buy all the games?
That I don't know.
Right, that we'll have to look into. How they looking?
VancouverGiants.com.
VancouverGiants.com. How they looking this year? How they looking as of late, Steve? I mean, they're just dominating this year still.
They're okay. They're one of 4 or 5 teams that could win the WHL. And I mean, obviously, the farther you get into the WHL, and winning would be huge for them. It would be a huge kind of momentum thing. I think if they were to get knocked out early, I think that would be a difficult thing to come back for. Although Kelowna came back, I think 2004 it was, after getting knocked out in the Western Conference Final and came back and won the Memorial Cup. So it can be done.
So are they as dominating as their record says, or that it can go either way? Hey, yeah.
Oh, I think Everett's very good. I think Medicine Hat will be very good.
I think Kamloops has a much improved team, and I think they're a team that people are really looking at too. So there's some work to do. The trade deadline is January 10th, and I think a lot of things will shake out after that.
What do you see them doing before January 10th?
I see them getting a center, like a top six guy, a number one or number two center, and I see them going out and getting kind of a depth defenseman.
Awesome.
A more physical kind of playoff tough type guy.
Cool. Awesome. Steve Ewan.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, we're going to do it next week, Steve. We're going to talk about how McGuire didn't get in.
Okay.
We'll do that next week.
Thanks, man.
Awesome. Steve Ewan from the Vancouver Promise. Always appreciated. Steve Ewan from the paper I just mentioned, covering the Vancouver Giants, talking a little World Juniors. Canada, once again, will be playing Team USA at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow. All right, we are going to take another break right now. When we get back, we're going to be talking a little football with B.J. Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas. So always fun to have B.J. on. And we'll go from there. Hey, how about that? All right, everybody, here comes our little break. You're listening to 101.9 FM. And before we do play, I will tell you about our broadcast coming up this weekend, as on Friday night, we are going to be doing one UBC Thunderbird basketball game. It will be the women's game from War Memorial Gym, a big matchup versus SFU. That will be at 6:15 p.m. We're going to be on the air at 6 p.m. And then on Saturday, we've got a doubleheader for you at 6:15 p.m. from Burnaby, UBC and SFU. We're going to have the men at 6:15. We'll once again be on the air at 6. And then on Saturday night after the women's game at about 8 o'clock, we will have the women's game right after the men. Okay, hopefully I got through that all right. Anyways, we'll be right back with BJ Brian Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas in a jiffy.
less mosquitoes. Twitter edit number one.
I'm not arguing that point, but they're not
Boise
running
State
this game.
Boise State had their shot at Oklahoma, and they're giving them a heck of a shot.
Guys, I still
they don't
think
need to worry about anything else right now. Let's take a look at this.
Szafranski, I still think him with some type of run-pass option going to the right.
Boise State for the win. They hand it off to Johnson.
What'd you think, BJ?
That was great. Now, Daryl, that was the team that you said needs to go undefeated for three consecutive seasons before they deserve to go to a BCS game,
no,
right?
I said two consecutive seasons before they could be considered a shot for a national championship game.
Okay. Just double-checking because, you know, those mid-majors, they're no good at football.
You're a UNLV boy. You're happy to see your WAC conference pull out a win.
We're actually no longer members of the WAC. UNLV moved on to the Mountain West Conference several years back.
Why'd you do
but
that?
Yes, I listen, it was a great football game, and it was great to see a team that's really done it all year long come out and play big in the biggest game of really that university's existence.
Have you ever seen more kooky plays called?
It's all about the blue turf, baby. It inspires madness.
No, that was pretty crazy, though. No doubt about it. The Statue of Liberty, the running back lining up as a quarterback, throwing the touchdown pass, the lateral, the fact they went for it for the two-point conversion to win.
But yeah, that's the craziest part. But it just goes to show you, like, why teams like that, and then really why, I mean, looking at that team, looking at that game, I mean, that's the prototypical example, or really the perfect example of why a playoff system should be in college football. I mean, wouldn't you like to see them play again?
Well, what's the playoff system going to be, though?
Whatever it is, if it's 10 teams, if it's 16 teams, if it's 8 teams, obviously, I don't know what it is, but I would love to see Boise State now play USC to go on to play the winner of, Ohio State, Florida, or obviously the seedings change, but, it was so great, and it's really a shame. I mean, that's the best that a team like Boise State will ever do in the way the system is set up.
I just adore the regular season format, but I hear you. You know what? It's going to get people talking. It's going to get people talking, especially if they go out and they can do it again next year. Then what do you do?
Right. Absolutely. And then, it's almost a half decade of consistent, quality coming out of Boise State and out of the WAC and out of these smaller colleges. And you're right, you just got to get people talking and keep it going until that snowball just becomes an avalanche, and then it can't be ignored,
I still like the fact the regular season is still a national championship.
We know your thoughts on it, Daryl.
Although I did get beat, I'll give you, I got beat up last night with that theory, because that was Statue of Liberty to win the game on a two-point conversion? Are you kidding?
Well, and I mean, that's something that a major conference team wouldn't do, wouldn't try. They don't need to,
What's Bob Stoops thinking?
Yeah, it really goes to show what a team like Boise State needs to do to impress people.
But what's Bob Stoops, Oklahoma, who I was talking to a guy earlier today, told me they probably played the wishbone for 50 years. I mean, what are they thinking losing to a team pulling that crap off as far as they're thinking, I mean, what are you supposed to do? So, whatever. All right, moving on. To the pros? To the pro ranks?
To the pro ranks.
To the pro ranks.
How bad did Michigan look yesterday? Wow.
Oh, the Rose Bowl? I was pretty, a little tired at that point. I watched it. I bet on USC.
To the pro ranks. To the pros.
To the pro ranks. I'm not going to be able to have a conversation about the Rose Bowl. Although, I picked USC to win. Does that count for anything?
And the quarterback's name is Booty. Does that count for anything?
I actually found out John David Booty. The only reason he's John David was because he was like John, his dad, and he were John, and they didn't ever know who anybody was calling, so they added John David to his name.
Right.
Is he Josh Booty's brother?
I don't know. He could be.
The old Oklahoma quarterback. To the pros.
Both college quarterbacks.
To the pros. Are you ready?
To the bigs.
To the bigs.
I'm ready as long as I'm not in a Hummer limousine.
We're gonna kick things off. Is that what you're?
A low blow to start things off.
We're gonna kick things off, BJ, with the man from Green Bay. Sunday Night Football looked real good in what could ever be his last game. And this is a team, 8-8. That ain't too bad. And if things can go their way next year, they could even be the best team in, well, they could make the playoffs, no doubt about it. Green Bay, did we see Brett Favre's last game last Sunday night?
I don't think so. I think he comes back for one more year. And you know what? I think he does it right. I think he announces, this is my last year. And the league and the fans, and not only in Green Bay but around the country, can kind of have a chance to say goodbye to Brett and do it in the right way. I think we definitely see him come back. He's still got it. I mean, you look at it. I mean, they're one game out of the playoffs really at the end of all of that. And they had a lot of injuries. They're going to have to do something. They're going to have to add some weapons, to give them a good chance to win. I mean, that's the whole thing. Are you doing it just to have a farewell tour? I mean, isn't that what the last 2 years have been? You need to start putting people into positions that can help that team win. And they need to do it now. And listen, they have a lot of money under the salary cap, so they potentially could do it. There's going to be a lot of big-name free agents. So there are things they could do. I think we see Brett Favre come back for one more year. And I mean, complete dominance of the Chicago Bears, not only just, this one week, but his record in Soldier Field is, what, 13-1 over the last 14 games. I mean, it's insane.
And BJ, you say one game out of the playoffs, they actually lost in a tiebreaker to the Giants.
Right? Yeah. And I mean, that's what I'm saying. They get one more win, and they're in the playoffs. And throughout the season, they just kind of got to 8-8. It wasn't like they really went on a run. They just kind of got there. We really talked about them being one of the poorer teams, in the league for the majority of the season. So it's kind of weird that they now finished just one game out. It's strange.
All right, to the playoffs. Let's go over these games.
Playoffs.
Well, we'll start.
You should open with that, dude. Next week. I want to open with that.
I'll do it. We'll start with the Colts because that's Jim Mora's old team, taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. The Colts. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. And one thing the Chiefs do, they put up a lot of points, and they got a guy called Larry Johnson to run the football, and that's what the Colts can't do, is stop the run. Ronnie Brown tore them up again on the weekend, 150 yards for Miami rushing the ball. So what are we thinking in that one, BJ? The Colts?
Well, yeah, you just hit it right there. I mean, that's the key to the game, is the fact that, teams have been running all over the Colts. Remember, Jacksonville put up almost 400 rushing yards.
Houston, Ron Dane.
A couple weeks ago, or what, almost, well, how many, what did they come up with?
Yeah, I don't know. It was like
50, right? They both guys, Fred Taylor and Jones-Drew, crossed 100, and Pearman almost crossed 100 too. So he's running all over them.
Yeah.
And Larry Johnson is obviously capable of doing that. The Colts have no heart. We've talked about that all season. We've watched them lose, games that mattered, big games, bad games, poor games, games that didn't matter. It'll be interesting. I don't think Kansas City can get past them. I think it'll be too tough. There's a lot of pressure on the Colts. Peyton Manning isn't going to throw an egg in the first game of the playoffs, especially at home. I think it's going to be extremely tough to beat. But wouldn't you love to see the Chiefs take them down?
Well,
I mean, that would be fantastic.
I don't think Kansas City can do it because they don't seem to have a very good defense. Nothing.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Chiefs have lots of holes. I mean, this is not really a great football team. and the Colts are a more superior team, and they're going to put points up. I mean, everyone knows that. Hey, you're not going to beat the Colts by in a shootout. This is not going to happen. You're going to have to stop Peyton Manning, and the Chiefs don't have a defense that can do that. What we're going to have to see is some containment on the defensive side of the ball from the Colts to get Larry Johnson under control, because obviously, if a guy like him is running wild, it opens up the pass, it opens up the long ball. Trent Green can heave it up there. We've seen him do it before. And even though their receivers might be somewhat subpar, you know, Eddie Kennison, Sam Parker, these guys can make plays downfield. And so if Larry Johnson is running wild, really it changes, you know, what the Chiefs are able to do, and it really makes them obviously a much better team. But like you said, I mean, you know, stopping Peyton Manning is a whole other story, and they're going to have to do – whoever beats the Colts is going to have to do that, and I don't see the Chiefs doing it, and I especially don't see them doing it in Indianapolis at home in the Dome. If Indy was playing outside, you know, maybe the Chiefs then have a little bit more of a chance, but I don't think it's possible. I'm praying, though. I got my fingers crossed.
And also, Tony Gonzalez playing for the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's just say the Colts have put himself in a position where a Kansas City team that went 9-7, we're not going to be totally shocked if Kansas City pulls this off. But I want to ask you about a team, BJ, who they're the reason Kansas City got in. San Francisco goes into Denver last game of the season, beats the Broncos in overtime. You said the Broncos want to set themselves up for next year. They've done that. Looks like Jay Cutler's going to be a good quarterback. You know, they've got him some minutes now. But one thing, I mean, you know, I think the Colts don't like what they saw because, you know, they wanted to see Denver in the first round. You know they did.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I've said for several weeks now, since Shanahan made the change of, you know, setting themselves up for next year, I actually, you know, obviously the tragedy with, you know, Darren Williams and what happened on New Year's Eve. I think Denver is going to be a very tough team to beat next year. I'm actually going to put a little money on them to win the Super Bowl once this Super Bowl comes and goes, because, you know, not only are we looking at a team that's really setting themselves up for next year, you're seeing, you know, development of some younger players on that team, but now it's almost like they're going to have a cause, you know, and to do this for, you know, for their guy, a 24-year-old cornerback, you know, shot and killed, obviously, you know, far before he should have been. You know, I think it's going to give them a cause to rally around coming next year. So I think not only were they setting up for next year, I think they now have a reason to effing play next year.
All right, keeping it going in the AFC. You know, you've got, of course, San Diego and Baltimore getting the byes, but the Jets going into New England. I am not a Jet fan, and I'm not that big on Chad Pennington anymore. I think this is a good first-round matchup for the Patriots, to get through that first round.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think there's really much of a challenge there. You know, the whole thing with Mangini and Belichick and the coaches and you know, they work together and they're friends, and then they played each other and they didn't even shake hands. And, you know, I definitely don't see the Jets really being a major roadblock in the Patriots' way. Patriots, when it gets to the postseason, it's a totally different ballgame. And the Patriots are a team who have been doing it for so long, just winning in the playoffs, that they know what they're doing. They're not going to take the New York Jets lightly. They're going to come to play, and I think they're really going to shut them down. You know, that being said, Rodney Harrison now, it will not be playing on Sunday. You know, Pennington has had some success with the deep ball, throwing the long bombs, Delvernius Coles. There's guys that can make plays on the offensive side of the ball for the Jets. I don't think it's going to matter. I think they're just going to be overmatched in so many other different categories that the Patriots are really going to smoke them out. And I think New England is going to use it as an opportunity to make a statement of, hey, we might be the fourth seed in the AFC, but we're a contender.
Yeah, and quite frankly, if they do pull it off, and I think the Patriots do, they get it going to San Diego and Phillip Rivers versus Tom Brady. You never know what will happen.
Yeah, and you know, the Jets. Listen, I think the story for the Jets was that they made the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, not being the Jets, no one thought they were going to do anything. You know, Mangini has to be admired for what he did this year with that team and making the playoffs. That's a success story for them. Making the playoffs is nothing for New England. And I think New England is going to absolutely destroy them and look to really kind of tune it up and fine-tune things for the next week when they're going to have a bigger game, when they're going to be playing, a dangerous team, like you said, most likely the San Diego Chargers.
And moving on to the NFC, Chicago and New Orleans. I don't think many people would have called that at the beginning of the season, getting the first round bye. I mean, that's crazy, getting the first round byes in that conference. Talk about the game I'm all into, BJ. You got the Philadelphia Eagles hosting the New York Giants. May not be the best teams in the world, but it's definitely a fun matchup for people to watch.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of the better games of the weekend as far as from a spectator point of view, a real football game. I think it's going to be a battle. Who knew if Philly? Listen, I called their demise. I said they were done and they wouldn't win a game after McNabb went down, and they come back. Have they lost since McNabb went down? I don't think they have.
What's that? No, they lost to the Colts. They
lost since McNabb went down?
Yeah. They lost to the Colts in Indy on Monday Night Football.
You know, but they put some wins together. They win the division. Philly's on a roll right now, and the Giants is the complete opposite, where they've won one of their last seven, kind of backdoored into the playoffs. A team that's hurting and really not all there. If they win, it'll be a miracle, and I think everyone would say that. And that's almost why it's possible that they could win. The Giants Eagles. It's a divisional battle, although it is in the playoffs. And all New York needs to do is really step it up and find an answer to stopping Jeff Garcia, which has been done before in many cities around the league. I think it's going to be a great game. The Eagles are playing great football, and Brian Westbrook has to be, for all the press that LT gets, and then listen, 31 touchdowns, you deserve press. What he's doing is amazing. But, Brian Westbrook really serves a similar role to that in Philadelphia, where he can almost do anything. He'll run the ball, he'll catch the ball out of the backfield, he'll line up in the slot. He's a guy like that for Philadelphia, and he's really going to be the key. Will New York find a way to stop him and then put some points up on the board on the other side? Tiki Barber, now we thought it was going to be his last game on Saturday night, runs wild, 240 yards, 3 touchdowns. Now it's his last game again. And then, this is a guy that clearly showed he still has the tools, he still can play, and he's going to try and go it on top. I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants won.
Well, I think Philly win, obviously I do, but that's the thing. Philadelphia is playing about as well as they can, and the Giants, the Cowboys, and the team they're playing next week, the Seattle Seahawks, they're not playing very well. They have room to go up where Philly, I think they're peaking right now, but if Philly can maintain it, they're going to be tough to beat. But let's get into that one. Dallas going into Seattle Saturday night. Two teams who, you got to say, back their way into the playoffs. Seattle, I'm telling you, the Rams and the Niners and the Cardinals, that is going to be a different division next year. They're going to be in trouble next year if they play like this again. But Seattle does, for some reason, have the home game. Dallas and Seattle, what do you think?
Two teams that, you don't know what you're going to get week in and week out. We've seen just, brilliance from both of these teams, and then we've seen just utter disgust. You lose to Dallas on the last, or you lose to Detroit on the last game of the season.
At home.
As the Cowboys did on Sunday.
At home. At home.
Yeah, at home, right? We're really two teams that they're like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde to the NFL. Seattle's at home, and that has to be their saving grace, being able to win, that very weak, that very poor NFC West division, be able to get that home game. I think that's the key for Seattle, is the fact that they're going to be at home. Tony Romo has done some great things this year. He's still only a rookie. He still has only played in, 9 football games as a professional at the NFL level. Going into a place like Seattle, the decibels explode and your eardrums are gonna pop. I think he's gonna have a challenge going into Seattle and facing that. I like the Seahawks, I guess, quite simply because they're at home. We talked about a couple weeks back how Alexander and Hasselbeck, these guys were injured and they're rested, and now they can come out and really play and they're not tired and that wear and tear isn't there. Now's the time when we got to see that. We didn't see it towards the end of the regular season. Now we need to see it. It's the playoffs. And listen, the Seattle went to the Super Bowl last year, and the core of that team is still exists. So these guys have something to play for. At the very beginning, we said it's the playoffs, it's a whole new season, everything changes. I like Seattle to win this game.
Well, we'll find out, but Seattle, I mean, it ain't going to be the same thing for them next year. They're not getting this free ride anymore.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And you know, just to bring the betting aspect into play, we talked about the Philly Giants in a division game. Right now the Eagles are -6. You know, I'm taking the Giants +6. If I'm getting a touchdown, I'm all over it, even more so. And you know, on the same side, Seattle only minus a field goal at home has to look pretty attractive to a better.
Well, I'll start off by saying this. Do not blame that game on the defense, okay? I don't care who you play, whether it's a high school team, a junior college team, much less an NFL team. When you turn the ball over 5 times, 4 interceptions, 1 for a touchdown, 3 others in field position to set up touchdowns, you ain't gonna beat anybody I just talked about. Anybody. All right? And that was a disgraceful performance, in my opinion. We threw that game. We gave it away by doing that. We gave them the friggin' game. In my opinion, that sucked. What's that? Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
That's Jim.
That's beautiful. The best part about
playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs?
Sucks.
You kidding me? Playoffs?
We can't beat anybody.
What did he say? What did he say?
Hey, he was just talking, you know, how they couldn't beat anybody.
Not
you know,
a high school
and he
team.
Just hopes they can win a game. And then he kind of pauses and he goes, that sucks.
Playoffs?
Playoffs? A great soundbite of NFL lore. And we now have a couple additions that we'll be able to add this year. Out of some great sound bites we've had. I believe the Denny Green sound bite after the Bears game will live in infamy. I believe that will outlive Denny Green.
Which one was that one? I'll find
that. Clips of NFL legend, you know?
I'll find that for next week. Which one was that one?
You want to crown him? Crown their ass. The Bears are who we thought they were.
Crown their ass.
Unbelievable. And I would say that Terrell Owens has 25 million reasons to live would probably go right next to it as you know, great quotes that will kind of live on throughout the season.
Awesome. All right, Beej, we're out of time. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, Eric with Flex Your Head is coming up right now. I'd like to thank my guests, Alex Murphy, Vern Knott from the UBC men's basketball team, Wilson Wong, Steve Ewan, Jerry Green from the Detroit News, and BJ Brian Bass, my Las Vegas guy. Okay, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, everybody.